such a greedy fool is looking for the gold I've never found. It serves him right, and no one here is missing him, least of all the newlyweds of Saginaw, Michigan, with the happiest man and wife in Saginaw, Michigan.
All those great memories up there in Saginaw, Michigan. That, of course, is Lefty Frizzell. It was a number one country record in 1964, and probably number one also in Saginaw itself on its little radio station that they had up there. And, of course, in Saginaw, Michigan, the late Ginny and Jack Coughlin, they had a son who liked to bang on pots and pans and eventually the drums. And, of course, their son is Dick Coughlin, who was the drummer of a great group that so many people often say, well, who are those guys? Why wasn't that a hit? Dick Coughlin, leader and drummer of the Cherry Slush. Welcome to Day of the Raves Relics and Rarity Show.
Thank you. I'm very glad and honored to be on tonight.
Well, it's good to have you. I got to be honest with you. You know, like a lot of people, the first time we may have heard the great heard of the great Cherry Slush was probably, you know, either on the radio, I guess, if you lived in an area that was lucky enough to have that regional hit record of I Cannot Stop You, or it might have been watching national TV. My recollection is that that was one of the records. I don't think it won, but it was one of the records that Dick Clark played.
One of the Dick Clark radio records. I can't remember what the other two records were. That it was on with, but I know we came in second on the American Bandstand Radar record. I think I got something like an 85.
How did the record even get onto Dick Clark Show? I mean, that by itself tells me that you had some good promo people working the record.
Well, we did. We had a good management team, Vivian Bruce and Jim Leach. They both did a good job for us. We were getting national airplay at the time on I Cannot Stop You, and eventually it found its way to Philadelphia, and somehow Dick picked it up and put it in on his record rating.
And do you remember what record, what 45 actually beat it out?
I think it was Apples, Peaches, Pumpkin Pie.
Well, at least it got beat out by a great hit record.
Yeah, that's by Jay and the Techniques. As it turned out, when we did the Upbeat Show, we ended up doing the Upbeat Show with Jay and the Techniques.
And did you guys talk about the record battle on Dick Clark's American Bandstand or what?
No, that was quite a few years ago. I don't remember if we talked about that in particular, but we talked about a lot of things, I can tell you that.
So give me a feel for Saginaw, Michigan. You're out in the middle of the country. You know, it's an area, I guess that's what, western Michigan, Dick?
Well, actually, we're in, we're 90 miles straight north up from Detroit, right up I-75. We're about center of the state, actually the center of the state is St. Louis, Michigan. It's out west of where I am here, but we're about 90 miles straight up of Detroit, just about on Saginaw Bay.
So let's get a little bit of a background there. So from where you grew up, you had a local radio station in Saginaw, which was what,
WSAM.
What is it?
WSAM.
WSAM. And there was another one, too, in Saginaw. Wasn't there WNXK or something like that?
WKNX.
Oh, KNX.
1210. Yep.
And 1210 KNX also was a top 40 station back then, wasn't it?
That's correct.
So you're growing up, and I guess you're checking out some local radio there in Saginaw, Michigan. Now, were you also fortunate to pick up any of the Detroit stations or the Big 8, CKLW? Did that come into your area as well?
Yep. After the record went to number one in the Saginaw Flint area, including WTAC, Bob Dell played it a lot there in Flint, then they started picking it up at CKLW.
Okay, and what is Saginaw like? Is it a mining town?
Saginaw is an industrial town. Saginaw was very big in General Motors, and there's been so much pull out of in the auto industry up in this area. So much has moved to the Sun Belt. There's really not that much industry in Saginaw anymore. We do have Delphi Engineering, but There's not a whole lot else going on as far as industry's concerned.
But for the most part, it's kind of like a heavy blue collar area.
Oh yeah, very much so.
People like their rock and roll up there, don't they?
Oh, they love their rock and roll.
So give me some background. You know, try and think about like what I'm interested to know, and I'm thinking that those who like the Cherry Slush, you know, and want to know more about the Cherry Slush, maybe give me and the listeners some idea as to like what radio you remember listening to, what were some of the groups that you used to like, some of the tunes, records that may have inspired you to go looking for fellow bandmates, and then let's get into the first band, the first couple guys you had together, what the group might have been called. We'll kind of like work our way up to the Cherry Slush.
Yeah, the first thing, you know, was the Beatles had come out. And at first, I wasn't a real big fan of the Beatles.
Were you not a big fan of the Beatles because you previously, you know, did you start off when you were a kid maybe listening to Group Harmony and doo-wop?
That's correct. I was a great big Beach Boys fan. I loved that five-part harmony.
Okay.
And the Beatles kind of had to grow on me. But the other guys I was going to school with, they were all big Beatles fans, so we kind of went that way at first before we started doing a lot. We used to do a lot of things by the Birds. I used to remember listening to WSAM a lot, and they'd, they'd play things. I don't remember if you remember a group, an old group called Johnny and the Hurricanes.
Sure. Of course, Johnny just recently passed away not that long ago. You know, they would wear their suits and I remember they would come out on stage and they just moved, and they moved like black guys on stage. They had so much good rhythm and so much movement on stage, and they were just a real, if you don't mind me saying, a real kick-ass band.
Yeah, they were. They were just an instrumental band, but they could really tug at your heart when they played. But, you know, we'd listen to stuff like that, and of course we'd listen to the Beach Boys, and then the Lovin' Spoonful, and the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, and we just basically started doing covers, you know.
And when you started doing covers, Dick, what was the name of the first band that you actually, you know, put together?
The first band we actually put together was called the Wayfarers.
And how old were you at the time?
Three of us.
What's that?
And that was just three of us, and it was called the Wayfarers.
Who was in the Wayfarers? It was you on the drums, I would assume.
Drums, Mark Burdick played guitar, and Tom Armbruster played rhythm guitar. We didn't have a bass player.
And how old were you when the Wayfarers got together?
I was 13, I believe I was.
Now, where do 13-year-olds play at the, you know, where was the venues that 13-year-olds would get to play? Was it pretty much just like local school dances and garages and things of that nature?
Yeah, we would do school dances, we would do battles of the bands, you know, things like that. There wasn't really a whole lot of big venues going on at that time.
Did any bands that ever beat you out go on to become big rock stars?
not really. We played with a...
You kicked everybody's butt, huh?
Rock stars, but none that really beat us out. When we did a battle of the bands, we were pretty much number one once we got done with it.
Okay. I like the confidence I hear. So the Wayfarers are three cats, and I assume that you're playing a lot of the music that you spoke about. You're playing the Beatles. I guess you're playing some Stones, Lovin' Spoonful. You're playing the Birds. Did you actually have any originals as the Wayfarers?
Yeah, we had one that's on the CD. And it was called, one that I wrote most of, and it's called Don't Walk Away. And it was a song that I wrote about my seventh grade girlfriend, who I still see from every now and then down at the Home Depot where I work.
And does she know that, is she well aware of the fact that she broke your heart and as such was the inspiration of the song?
Oh, yeah, she's well aware of it. We've talked about it several times since junior high school.
Now, Don't Walk Away, which you did, and I guess you wrote, you're saying that when you were with the Wayfarers, when you were about 13 years old, you guys later recorded the song and actually released it, I believe, on the flip side of I Cannot Stop You.
That's correct.
Well, we're going to take a listen to it. Cherry Slush. This is from the USA recording. Dick, I believe you're, I guess you're singing lead on this one.
Which one are you playing?
Don't Walk Away.
No, I'm singing backup.
Oh, backup. Okay, you wrote the song, but you're not singing lead.
Dan Parsons.
Okay, we're going to take a listen to the flip side of I Cannot Stop You. Dick Coughlin, my guest on Relics and Rarities tonight. Sounds to me like it could have been a double-sided hit record. What a great tune that is, The Cherry Slush, written by Dick Coughlin when he was 13 years old. And after that great record, Dick, what happened? The world wants to know, what happened to the young lady? Did she walk away? Did she come back? Whatever happened to her?
No, she walked away.
She did, huh? But she probably...
She walked away, but...
Probably regrets it, though, right? What's her name? I mean, not her last name, but what was her first name?
What was her name? Her name now is Patty Swanson.
Oh, Patty Swanson. Okay. Patty Swanson, wherever you are! You broke his heart back then!
I should probably throw a rock through the window at work tomorrow. But...
Okay. Well, she works where? I guess at the Home Depot, you said, right?
I work at the Home Depot out in Thomas Township. She lives out in Thomas Township.
Well, now, I don't know if you should say that. You may have 1,000 people showing up there.
Well, it's Home Depot store 2779 under the auspices of Chad Hall. We're there.
Yeah, well, that's true. Maybe if they all buy something, your boss will love it that he's got a celebrity working for him. He might end up with a raise.
But that would be nice if he's listening. A lot of people come in and buy snowblowers. I got lots of snowblowers.
And probably a lot of snow out there in Saginaw, Michigan, I would imagine.
That's snowing right now.
Is it really?
Yes, it is.
What are you guys expecting to get, a whole bunch or just a little dusting?
We're just supposed to get a little bit of a dusting tonight, I guess.
Okay. Well, Don't Walk Away, which was really pretty cool tune, real good tune. It's a good double side of 45. Of course, the other side of the record, we'll get to that. We'll jump to that one right now. That was the record that gave me my first exposure to Cherry Slush. And of course, you know, that weird like guitar, that like intro in the record. I know myself, and I've got a listener out there in, I think he's in Nebraska. We'll get to his email. He sent me a really nice email. His name is Clark. But how did you guys get the sound? How did you get that cool sound on the record?
That was done totally by lead guitar player Gene Bruce. And what he did was he hit one note on his Gibson guitar, and he was playing through a Gibson fuzz tone. And he backed the body of his guitar into his mesh speaker cover, and he got a good feedback going. And once we got that feedback going, and we knew that he was going to be able to hold it through the whole song, bang, then we started doing the recording, so we had that feedback all the way through it.
Was that kind of like an accidental discovery? Was he actually looking and trying hard to get that kind of a sound?
We were working towards it. We wanted to get something like that because the fuzz tone itself wouldn't sustain itself long enough. But Gene was a master at doing feedback like the Yardbirds used to do.
And Gene, of course, you said was your lead guitar player?
Yeah, Gene's our lead guitar player.
Who were the other members of Cherry Slush?
Well, we had myself, of course, on drums, Gene Bruce on lead guitar, Art Hoffey on bass, Dan Parsons was our lead singer, and Brian Bennett was our keyboard player.
And the 45, of course, and I know you've read where so many people thought that the Cherry Slush were actually a Chicago band. I'm probably one of those guilty people. You know, you make the assumption when you don't know a lot about a band because you're on the USA label, you figure you're probably a local Chicago group. But was the record, I would imagine, was it recorded in Chicago, or did they just pick up the master?
I Cannot Stop You has an interesting story to it. We had played at Daniel's Den, one of the local nightclubs here, one night, on a Saturday night. And right after that night, we got into our cars and we drove all the way down to Cleveland, Ohio, all night long. And we actually recorded that song the next morning at Audio Sound Studios in Cleveland.
And how did it come to be that particular studio? Is there a story behind that as well?
Wagner and
Wait. Before you just say Wagner, because we're introducing his name for the first time, so we're talking about Dick Wagner, and perhaps you could tell us a little bit about Dick Wagner and then how we got you down into Cleveland.
Dick was one of our idols at the time. He had a band here called the Boss Men, and they were just a fantastic band for the time, and we would go and see them wherever they played. And we just got to be good friends of Dick's, and eventually we got put on a show with him. And Dick liked our sound, and he decided that he had some material that he thought he'd kind of like to have us try and go down to the studio and see how well we could do it. That's how we got I Cannot Stop You.
That was a Dick Wagner composition.
That's right, yeah. Dick wrote that, and he arranged it and produced it. He's the one that drove all the way down there with us all night.
And by the way, Dick sends his regards. He sent me an email about an hour ago. I'm hoping he'll call. In fact, let me give out the phone number if anybody out there would like to call. It's 732 area code. It's 866-4475. That's 732 area code, 866-4475. But Dick said he just got back from L.A., and unfortunately he was going to be crashing out. He said he needed some much-needed rest, some sleep. So, you know, that's what he said an hour ago. Now, whether he decided to stay up and listen to the interview. So, Dick, if you're out there, get on the phone. We want to talk to you. 732-866-4475.
Yeah, it would be nice to talk to Dick. He's a brilliant songwriter, Brent, an excellent musician.
When is the last time you and Dick spoke?
We spoke, it was probably 3 years ago. We did a Cherry Slush reunion concert over out here in Freeland, Michigan, and Dick had his band, the Boss Men, and Dick Wagner and the Frost on the show, and we were the other headline act on the show. We had the all the original members of the Cherry Slush.
So Dick Wagner wrote I Cannot Stop You, and he played on the record as well?
Yeah, Dick did a little bit of background guitar work, but back in those days, you know, everybody used a ghost musician or two.
Well, let's listen to the record that got the whole world's attention to that great Cherry Slush 45. I still have a difficult time, Dick, trying to figure out how that record actually got stopped. I don't know how it got derailed, because to me it's a record that should have just catapulted to the very, very top of every national chart. Whew, I love the record!
Yeah, well, we kind of thought so, too, and it did get to number one in a lot of markets. It just didn't get the right promotion that it needed.
Yeah, in fact, I took down some notes. Let me see if I can grab some of my notes over here. It was number one. Let's see. Let me cheat over here. I need a producer, Dick. You want to come down to New Jersey? You could be a Relics and Rarities producer. I have notation here that says that I Cannot Stop You by the Cherry Slush was number one on WKNX, which was the Saginaw station.
Right.
And I believe it was a big record in Omaha, Nebraska. I've got it here, a survey from March 1st of 1968. It was number three on WYND in Sarasota, Florida.
Went to number one there.
What's that? It did go to number one?
Number one in Sarasota.
Okay. Yeah, because maybe it was number one the week before, the week after. I was only able to get a hold of a couple surveys over here. I see in WAVZ in New Haven, Connecticut, the record charted pretty well also there in early, you know, 68, March of 68. WSPT, Stevens Point, Wisconsin. You guys were a hit there as well.
Yeah, we also WNOE in New Orleans and WMEX in Boston.
Do you have a lot of the actual charts from a lot of these stations where you guys actually, you know, hit the top 40?
We have some of the charts. They're in the scrapbook. We have a group scrapbook. Right now, Dick Wagner has the scrapbook.
Okay. Maybe we should just wake him up. Who cares if he needs rest? Dick, I'm only kidding if you're out there listening. We got a lot of respect for you. Come on, Dick, wake up!
Oh, well.
Speaking of Dick Wagner, an email, this is a long email, I'll try and read some of it, maybe we'll get to all of it. It says here, I think Dick Wagner's idea of the fuzz guitar ad certainly transformed a 64 garage band into a new entity. I also have to say that Dick's song, I Cannot Stop You, is superior to any of his own Boss Men 45s. That's what you get for not being awake, Dick. No, we're only kidding. Come on, Dick. No, he made a lot of great... You know, that's just an opinion there, and I might echo that opinion as well, and I like the Bossman. I bought the 45s as well, but I got to say that I Cannot Stop You was probably a top 50 record for me of all time.
Yeah, they are...
And by the way, and the emailer goes on to say here that I'm not surprised that I Cannot Stop You turned out to be such a great record because of the help that they received from Dick Wagner. So obviously here's somebody with a lot of respect for Dick Wagner. Also, he says, I'm a fan of Dick's Frost as well.
Dick Wagner and the Frost.
Right, which were on the Date label. For those of you who like to collect 45s, look for Dick Wagner and the Frost on the Date label. He also says that, I would think that Terry Knight most likely helped the Boss Men get signed to Cameo after Terry Knight and the Pack got on Lucky 11, which was a, you know, Cameo subsidiary.
Correct.
It would be right for Dick to help another band along because of that. I guess, you know, Terry Knight helps him. He, in turn, helps you guys.
Oh, yeah.
Says that Terry...
We also did a lot of stuff with Terry Knight and the Pack, too. I got to know Mark Farner and Donnie Brewer pretty well, too, that have gone on to become, of course, Grand Funk Railroad.
Right.
But they became some pretty good friends, and I learned a lot of my drum stuff from Don Brewer.
Here's a guy, this is still from the same email I'm reading. This is one informative guy. He says, Terry Knight had been... How does he know this stuff? Terry Knight had been Jack the Bellboy at WJBK as a DJ before trying the music circuit. He says, I'm also surprised that Dick Wagner did not sign the Cherry Slush to Cameo.
Well, we tried.
He talks about a tune here. Oh, no, he talks about Daniel's Den.
Right.
And how, you know, it showcased a lot of bands from all over. And Daniel certainly had a lot of talented groups to work with in the area. I'm sure it was a great place for the Cherry Slush to hone their skills.
It was. Daniel's Den was a great venue.
Let me see.
He's still alive. I saw him at the gas station last week.
Oh, is that right?
He's in his 90s, and he looks fine.
Well, we'll talk about Daniels then in just a little bit over here. Anyway, he says that They Don't Come, which was the one of your 45, actually your second 45 on the USA label.
Correct.
He says They Don't Come was a great 45 and a bona fide hit here in Omaha when the Poor were also hitting with their great 45. So he's referencing other records there as well. I don't know why, but the song makes me feel like it's like Emmett Rhodes is doing it. Let's see. He also makes an interesting comment here about Gotta Take It Easy. And indicates that it was recorded not only by the Cherry Slush, but also by Michael and the Messengers using the same backing track.
Yeah, well, it wasn't exactly the same backing track. There's a different organ, there's a different keyboard track on there, and I also did the lead vocal on there.
On the...
On ours.
On Gotta Take It Easy?
Correct.
Okay. Well, you know, let's jump to that one now. Let's take a quick listen to Gotta Take It Easy. Who did it first? Did you guys do it first? Did Michael and the Messengers do it first?
I really don't remember, to tell you the truth. I think maybe Michael and the Messengers might have done it first, and then we used it as a B-side.
And do you remember how you got to that record? Did a producer, who recommended the record? Did the label just throw it on there? What was the story behind that song?
One that I could probably sing very well, and one that I could that we could learn fast. So that was actually a decision that was done by USA Records.
Okay, well, it was an opportunity for you to show off your vocal, Dick.
Well, let's give it a shot.
Let's give it a shot. Gotta Take It Easy, the Cherry Slush. Dick Coughlin doing the lead vocal on that one there. Got to Take It Easy. You didn't sound like you took it easy. It sounded like you sang your heart out on the record.
I did that song in two takes. We did I did the one vocal take, and then I did what we called a malt. And I did the malt take over the top of it, singing the exact same thing, and you can't hardly even tell that there's two vocals on there.
Now, when you recorded that particular song, which was your second single for USA, was it recorded as well in the Cleveland studio?
No, that was recorded in Chicago.
Okay. And when was that recorded?
That was at Chess.
Okay, Chess Studios in Chicago. But do you remember, you know, the month and the year that you actually recorded that 45?
Oh, gee, I don't know. I'd have to look it up on my sheet here.
Okay. Well, listen, if I can cheat, you can cheat also.
Yeah. I think it was 1967.
Well, how much time? I mean, I Cannot Stop You was charting in early 68. Of course, you could have recorded the songs, you know, in sometime in 67. But, you know, how much time differential was there between the recording of your second single and I Cannot Stop You?
Actually, I Cannot Stop You was still charting when we recorded Day Don't Come. So, there wasn't a whole lot of time lapse. I know as soon as I Cannot Stop You started falling off the charts, then they came right out with They Don't Come, which got a number two pick in Billboard magazine.
When you recorded the, when you went to record for USA, was there some initial deal that said that you would be allowed two singles, or was it almost like a, you know, after every single, you had to hope that they would continue to release product from your group?
Well, we didn't have a set number. Like, some people had a set number, like they would be signed for five singles and an album. We were guaranteed an album after 100,000 in sales on I Cannot Stop You. Well, I Cannot Stop You, of course, sold well over 100,000 copies, but we never got the album.
Did you ever get the money?
Not a dime.
Who do you think took the money?
Well, the record company's no longer in business.
Okay.
I can't make a definite answer on that, but they sure disappeared quick.
I mean, do you think your management did you in, or you think it was more the record company?
I don't think it was our management at all. I think it was somebody higher up than our management.
So your story of the royalties, I guess, echoes that of so many rock and rollers from the 60s.
Oh yeah.
How did you settle upon USA? I think I read somewhere there were actually several labels, and of course our Clark, our very knowledgeable emailer who I think knows more about you guys than you might know about yourself. He's an incredibly intelligent emailer out there. But I mean, he points out the fact that, you know, Terry Knight had connections, of course, at Cameo. So how did you end up on USA, and were there other labels involved trying to get a hold of your masters?
Yeah, the other labels that were involved at the time were Mercury, Atco, Columbia, Lorry, Buddha. But what happened was I Cannot Stop You first came out on a local flip label called Coconut Groove, and we went down there to Mount Morris one night to actually get on a conference call with these labels and decide on a label that we were going to go with. But by the time we got to Mount Morris, the guys at Coconut Groove, or back then it was called Profonics, had already made a deal with USA, so we really didn't have much say in it. They had already leased the master.
Do you, when you look back, and of course you have a CD out called Looking Back. I don't. Is that a new release, or is that CD by the Cherry Slush, Looking Back? Has that been out for a while?
It's been out for a couple of years. It's we just wanted to. To give our fans something, you know, that they could, if they couldn't find the actual records and they wanted to have a collection of them, we wanted to give them a little a CD that they could have that had all of our songs on it, plus a bio booklet that went along with the CD.
Okay. Of course, the CD is called Looking Back, and in Looking Back, what are your thoughts, having gone to USA record label? Should you have gone somewhere else? Were you?
I could have gone someplace else. The ideal one that we really wanted to get with at the time was, well, there were two. We wanted to go with either Mercury, or we wanted to go with Atco, because Atco had the Buffalo Springfield at the time, and we really wanted to get more aligned with that type of a group.
Did you have any, I mean, of course you work with, now if you'd gone to Atco, would you have looked for, you know, a producer that worked with the Buffalo Springfield? Would you have been very content with Dick Wagner?
No, we were content with Dick, but I guess if we would have signed with Atco, it would have been kind of up to Atlantic to decide who was going to actually do our producing for us.
You might have had Tom Dowd as a recording engineer.
Yeah.
You know.
Would have been a coup.
Might have sent it down to the Fame Recording Studios.
That. Well, we did do, They Don't Come was done in the same studio where the Stones did Satisfaction.
What is it?
Chicago.
What song?
They Don't Come.
Was done,
That was done at Chess Records, the same studio where the Stones recorded Satisfaction, and the same engineer, Ron Mallow.
Now, Day Don't Come was the second USA 45. We just heard the other side of it, actually. The song that you sang lead on, Gotta Take It Easy.
Correct.
So we're going to flip the record over. Let's listen to the Cherry Slush. Dick Coughlin, the leader and drummer of the Cherry Slush, is live tonight with yours truly, Dave the Rave. It's my Relics and Rarity show. And let's listen once again to the Cherry Slush. I often wondered if the day would ever come. You know, when you were a kid, you know, I was, I guess, like, I'm born in 54, Dick. Actually, the last day of 54. I'm a New Year's Eve baby, so for all intents and purposes, I'm born in 55. 4 hours away from 55. So when these records came out, you know, I'm, what, about 12 years old? But I'm a record geek. And, you know, to hear such a cool 45, you know, when Dick Clark played it, I couldn't always get those... find those records that he would play as record, you know, record battle records on the American Bandstand show. But to finally find the record and actually getting to know you and having you as a guest on my radio show is, for me, it's just a super cool thing. Dick Coughlin, leader and drummer of the Cherry Slush, and whew, what a cool tune that is. Day Don't Come. Second 45 for the Cherry Slush, and give us your thoughts on that particular record, on that second 45.
That was a very, very commercial piece, and that was actually done with 16 pieces of the Chicago Symphony, doing the strings and the horns in the background, and that's something that nowadays they would do on a keyboard, but back then we used the actual orchestra.
I mean, it certainly didn't have the fuzz guitar that the first record did it?
It was a very, very commercial song, and cost him a fortune to produce that for us.
What was a move in that direction welcomed by the band, or was there actually some members of the band that thought maybe you guys were trying too hard for a hit? Not that there's anything wrong in trying to have a hit. Back in that time period, you know, everybody was striving for a hit record. But, you know, talk about the band, you know, as far as moving in that direction. Was everybody, you know, in agreement, or were there some people who thought that they should have stuck with more garagey, psychedelic type of tunes?
I think maybe Danny, our singer, might have wanted to stay with something more hard rocking. He was that kind of a guy. He really liked to do the hard rock stuff. Myself, as far as They Don't Come is concerned, I loved it because, as I told you before, I was a big Beach Boys fan and a big fan of harmony and the beautiful music sound. And to me, that's what that record had.
Yeah.
I was really thrilled when I heard the finished product.
I admit it. It's got a great hit sound to it. Okay. Cherry Slush. And that's probably the, I guess, because it didn't do as well as I Cannot Stop You. It certainly did not sell as well. And didn't get played on Dick Clark's American Bandstand, did it?
No, that one didn't quite make it there.
So it's actually like the harder 45 to find between the two USA Cherry Slush 45s. Maybe John Sequenzi has got a copy of it.
I'm sure he probably does.
And let me explain why I mentioned his name. Of course, Dick knows why I mentioned his name. John Sequenzi is a gentleman that I bought some cool garage 45s on eBay. And somehow John and I started talking about, you know, just cool garage tunes, and Cherry Slush came up. And he mentioned, he goes, "Oh, yeah, I know Dick Coughlin, the drummer." I was like, "You do? I mean, I could actually get to talk to somebody from the Cherry Slush?" He's like, "Well, I could, you know, I could ask him, you know." I guess he was playing it safe. He thought, just in case he didn't want to talk to him, which is the right thing to do. And, of course, I want to thank John who hooked me up. John Sequenzi up in Connecticut, hooking Dave the Rave up, and, of course, all of our great listeners, to you, Dick Coughlin.
Yeah, John's a good guy. We email back and forth a lot and talk to each other on the phone quite a bit.
Yeah, I also want to say hello to and thanks to Mike Dugo. Do you know Mike Dugo?
I don't believe I do.
Okay, Mike Dugo. I know Mike actually did an interview with your bass player, Art.
Oh, okay.
A couple years back. Mike runs a really cool internet site. It's called 60s. 60sgaragebands.com. And I guess he's somewhat of an authority on garage music. But he was awful nice. He was, last minute, he put up a little post about our interview tonight. So I want to thank him and all the people who subscribe to his newsletter. And certainly check it out, folks. It's www.60sgaragebands.com. Mike Dugo. So you got a lot of fans, a lot of newsletters out there, and a lot of fan sites that are keeping the legacy of the Cherry Slush alive, Dick.
I think that's great. You know, it's great to be remembered. I know it's a time in my life that I will never forget, and a time that I will always cherish forever.
Yeah, in Saginaw, you were blessed with a band that gave us a lot of great rock and roll. I'd like to just take a moment or two and play a record from one of my favorites. From Saginaw, Question Mark and the Mysterians.
Okay.
That, of course, was a hit record for Tommy James and the Shondells. But that's the original version. And I got to tell you, Dick, I don't know if you know this or not, but Tommy James and I are working on a radio show together. We're going to be co-hosting a show called American Jukebox. You know, we sit around, and a lot of times we're trying to figure out what tunes we're going to play, and we talk about different records. And Tommy always laughs. He kind of chuckles when we talk about the question mark and Mysterians tunes of Do Something to Me. Because, number one, it was arranged by Tommy's arranger, Jimmy Wisner.
Right.
And on top of that, Tommy always says, you know what, Dave, I got to tell you, they did a better version of it. I just happen to have the hit with it, but they did the better version.
You know, when you do that, I'd like to talk to Tommy. I haven't talked to Tommy in years.
Oh, really? Well, that'd be cool. Tommy's, you know, Tommy hails from Niles, Michigan, and you might know that. Where is Niles in relation to Saginaw?
Niles is in the very southwestern part of the state. It's almost down towards the Indiana state line.
Okay. You know, a band that Tommy talks about, you know, going back to those early days, you mentioned one of them earlier tonight, Johnny and the Hurricanes. Tommy always used to tell me stories about, you know, how incredible they were.
Yeah.
And, you know, a band, because he lived near Indiana, he used to see the Rivieras a lot.
Uh-huh.
Did they make it down to Saginaw much?
Rivieras did get up to Saginaw a few times, right. Yes.
And there was a band that he would see called the Spinners. But not the Spinners that, you know, recorded for Motown and recorded on Atlantic. It was like a white, you know, rock and roll, garagey kind of a group called the Spinners. Did you ever see that band?
Oh, I never heard of that one.
He talks about them quite a bit, but he loves that first version of Do Something to Me, question mark and Mysterians. Now, they're from Saginaw. Tell me about them. Are they neighbors? Do you know them?
Yeah, I know question mark pretty well. I know Bobby Baldarama and Frankie Lugo pretty well. Just for some of question mark's fans out there, he did suffer a little tragedy in the past month or two. And for those of you that are not aware of it, he totally lost his house in a fire.
Yeah, that was. And tragedy on top of tragedy, I understand. For whatever reason, I can't quite understand. But for whatever reason, I understand that he had no insurance.
Right. You know, I don't know anything about the man's personal life. You know, and I wouldn't even want to go into it.
Yeah, that's why whether he had it, should have had it, whatever. You know, nobody wants to hear about anybody's house burning down and all the great memories and, you know, just, you know, your worldly possessions all of a sudden just disappearing.
Yeah, they used to play out at a place called the Bay City Roll Air Rink over in Bay City, Michigan. It was an outdoor roller rink that on Friday and Saturday nights they put up a band shell and they'd have bands come in and play. That's where I first saw question mark and the Mysterians.
Well, they were probably one of the top bands in Saginaw. I know you mentioned the Bossmen earlier as well. And, of course, the Bossmen never really had a hit, though. Not like question mark, but, of course, that doesn't mean that they weren't the kings of Saginaw, Michigan.
It was a kind of a three-band war between the Bossmen, question mark, and Mysterians, and us, the Cherry Slush, though.
Uh-huh. And how about the Bossmen? I know, of course, its leader, Dick Wagner, you know, wrote I Cannot Stop You and drove you down to Cleveland to the recording studio and had a lot to do with the Cherry Slush being recorded. But, tell me about the Bossmen. Where did you see them?
The Bossmen, they played a lot of bands at the local YMCA here. Used to have a thing on Saturday nights called the Y-A-Go-Go. And the Bossmen would play that a lot of times. And they also played a lot up in Traverse City at a place called the Tom's House. And we'd go all the way up to Traverse City just to hear the Bossmen play.
Now, where was Daniel's Den that I heard so much about?
Daniel's Den was a movie theater, an old converted movie theater, which was on State Street in Saginaw. And it was bought by Frank Patrick and two other business partners of his, and it was originally turned into a young adult key club, non-alcoholic key club. And then it really wasn't going very well at that point, so Frank opened it up to the whole public, and the place took off. If you got a gig at Daniel's Den, you made it. You were there.
Well, I heard that, got to keep a straight face when I say this, but I heard that Daniel's Dan also had a really cool disc jockey.
My brother.
Oh, is that right? Your brother.
John Coughlin, my brother, was the DJ there.
And, of course, we're talking about records, folks, not MP3s. You know, he had vinyl records that they would play back in the 60s. That means I got to visit your brother's record collection.
He's got a ton of them, believe me.
Well, tell him to keep me in mind when he wants to sell.
Okay.
Dick Coughlin of the Cherry Hill, of the Cherry Slush.
That's better.
Kind of like the snow when it melts, you know, you can think of Cherry Slush.
There's an interesting way we got that name.
Well, let's hear about it.
Well, we were playing up in Rose City under the name of the Bells of Rimney at the time. And we went into a place called Dottie's Dairy Bar. And on the wall of the dairy bar, there was an advertisement there for a drink called the Cherry Slush. So our bass player, Art, kind of backed up to the wall, put his hand behind his back, and yanked the sign off the wall. And we walked out of the dairy bar, and he still had this sign, and we looked at it, and we thought, well, Scott, that's got to be it. That's our new name.
And what was the name of the store where you pulled down the sign?
Dottie's Dairy Bar up in Rose City, Michigan.
Dottie's Dairy Bar. Well, Dottie, if you're listening, I know where Art lives.
So do I.
So, yeah, so, you know, maybe we can get a reward if we can get that sign returned to Dottie.
Probably.
Yeah. Listen, Dick Wagner, the boss man, I think we owe a tune for Dick Wagner. So is there a favorite boss man tune that you happen to have?
Yeah, I always liked one that he did. It was called You and I. It has a great beat to it. I know it sounds like the Dick Clark record rating, but it had a great beat to it. And it's just one of those songs that you hear it and you can't help but love it.
That, of course, is the Boss Man, and you know, that could be my favorite as well. You know, I think you've convinced me. That's a great tune. You and I.
Yeah, and just so people know, the guy playing the harmonica on that song is Mark Farner from Grand Funk Railroad.
Really?
And Marky Farner played the bass and the harmonica on that song.
Wow, little trivia for tonight.
Yeah.
See, it's good to have you here. We're finding out things that we've never known before.
Haven't got enough time to go into all of it.
You know, the weird thing is that, you know, you may think I'm joking about that, but if you ever, like, go on these, like, internet boards and, you know, like, you know, places like 60sGarageBands.com and the chat room here of Top Shelf Oldies, I mean, you'd be amazed at, like, the minutia.
Okay.
That is so very important to the collectors and the people out there. They want to know everything.
Absolutely.
I'm surprised we haven't gotten an email question. What type of toilet paper did you guys use back in the 60s?
Delphi.
What's that?
It's called Delphi.
There you go. You see all kinds of questions people like to ask. Dick Coffin, of course, of the Cherry Slush. Now, the Cherry Slush made these records, of course, you know, 40, 41 years ago. But I was amazed you guys did a reunion just a couple years back, and I understand that the potential is there that the Cherry Slush may actually play another reunion soon.
Yeah, there's one in the works right now. The tentative date on it is June the 23rd, and it would be at a place called White's Bar, which is right next door to where the old Daniel's Den used to be.
Is it kind of like a Saginaw, Michigan juke joint?
Yeah, it's a rock bar is what it is. I know the guy that owns it real well, Bo White. I went to high school with him, and he has a lot of bands there during the summer.
And now, is there a website, or is there a way for people, is there a MySpace account? Is there any way for people to kind of like, you know, find out, you know, if this reunion takes place, or to find out, you know, just any, like, where does Cherry Slush News get printed? Or do we get to become the exclusive place to find out about it? Maybe you can just call me up anytime you have an announcement. We'll make it for you, Dick.
That sounds great. And yeah. Maybe when we get to the end of the show, if... any of my fans out there want to drop me an email, I'll give them my email address if they want to drop me a line.
Okay, well, we're going to get to that momentarily. I have one more, maybe two at the most. I have one record here. You know, on the CD, the Cherry Slush CD. Actually, before we get to this, I'm going to backtrack a moment. I apologize, folks, but I've got to ask this question before I forget. You mentioned that I Cannot Stop You originally came out on Coconut Grove.
Coconut Groove.
Coconut, what is it? Groove, like G-R-O-O-V-E? G-R-O-O-V-E?
Correct.
Coconut Groove. Yellow label, if I recall.
Yellow label with brown writing.
Right. You know, I wonder, and I know a lot of our listeners are going to wonder, what about the Coconut Groove pressing, and be exact, because, you know, these people, they're very much into the detail, Dick. What about the Coconut Groove single is different than the USA pressing?
Probably about maybe 15 seconds in time at the end, and the pressing that was done by USA was at the time what they called a Columbia Hotmaster. I had a wider groove to it. It brought the fidelity out more.
Okay, so it's 15 seconds at the end, but the intro and most of the instrumentation, the vocals are pretty much exactly the same, or not quite?
I was there. I know.
I mean, is it the same, you know, for the most part, though, is it the same master that you recorded in Cleveland, or is it actually a different take?
Oh, the same exact master. It was just that the plate that they used to press the vinyl, they had made a new master, like I said, it was called a hot master, and it just widened the grooves out a little bit to make it louder, give it more fidelity. That's the only difference.
That's a 45 that you don't see on that particular label. I don't think I've ever seen that up on eBay or in any collector show ever.
Yeah.
Do you still have your copy?
I'm sorry?
I said, do you still have your copy on Coconut Groove?
Yes, I have it, and it's not going anywhere.
You don't happen to have a box in the basement, do you?
No, but I do have some extra singles of She'll Be Back.
Really?
I've got about maybe 10 of those left.
Well, listen, I'm willing to pay a fair price, so if I pay that fair price, can I have one of those 10?
I think that can be arranged.
All right, that sounds good to me. In fact, let's take a listen to it. But before we do, quickly, I guess it's your first 45. Talk to me about one of these early recordings. This is recorded before I Cannot Stop You, She'll Be Back?
Yeah, this is recorded before it. We recorded this song on a rare 70-degree day in December. And Dick Wagner was driving a Cadillac convertible at the time, and we all got in Dick's Cadillac convertible, put the top down, and we drove down to Detroit and recorded this at United Sound Studios with Danny Dallas as the engineer.
You know, I just thought of something. You recorded I Cannot Stop You in Cleveland. You recorded your second 45 in Chicago, and you recorded this one in Detroit. you like moving around, don't you?
Yeah, well, we went wherever the studio fees were cheapest.
How old were you guys when you recorded She'll Be Back?
Well, that was probably, I don't think I even had a driver's license then. I think I was probably 15.
So what year is She'll Be Back, to the best of your recollection? What year would that be?
Late 65, early 66.
And was the group really called the Cherry Slush at the time, or were you still known as the Wayfarers?
At that time, we were known as the Bells of Rimney.
Oh, the Bells of Rimney. Well, let's take a listen to it. It's a great record, I'm telling you. Just remember now, if I pay a fair price, one of those 10 can go to me, because you may be getting a lot of emails about this record.
Okay.
It's a great one for sure. The Bells of Rimney, who later became the Cherry Slush. Tune is called She'll Be Back. Sounds like a Day of the Rave hit record, that's for sure. It's a Day of the Rave sure shot record. Going to make that a hit, that's for sure. She'll Be Back. And, of course, back on the phone line with me, Dick Coughlin, leader and drummer of not only the group that we just heard, the Bells of Rimney, but, of course, as many of you know the group out there, the Cherry Slush, USA recording artist, the Cherry Slush, Dick Coughlin, calling in from snowy Saginaw, Michigan. Good to have you on the phone tonight, Dick. You know, you spent almost like an entire, over an hour with us on the phone, and I appreciate so much bringing these records alive, because, you know, they're records, and, you know, you just wonder about these great records. So just to put like a little bit of a personal touch on these cool sounds is so very much appreciated.
It's my pleasure.
What are you doing these days, by the way?
Well, like I said before, I work out at the Thomas Township Home Depot here in Saginaw. Door 2779, and I also have my own business. I own and operate Central Professional Removal, and what this is I do body removals for local funeral homes and the medical examiner's office.
So if anybody has a heart attack tonight, give us a call. We'll hook you up with Dick.
Yep, I can take care of you.
Well, you must have some great stories to tell around the holidays, right?
Oh, yeah. I also, I
So you've had an interesting career.
Yes, I've done quite a few things.
You know, how about a quick update, if you won't mind mentioning the names of the band members one more time, what instrument they may have played, and to the best of your knowledge, you know, if you're in touch with them, what they might be doing today.
Danny Parsons, he's an attorney. He's currently living, I believe it's in St. Charles, Illinois.
And Danny was what, the rhythm guitar player or the lead guitar?
Singer.
Oh, singer. Oh, he just sang.
Yep, Danny was our singer.
Okay, he got all the girls or what? You know, I gotta mention that there's a picture in this Cherry Slush Looking Back CD. There's a picture of my guest Dick Coughlin, and you've got this just incredibly cute, you know, smile. You know the picture I'm talking about, don't you?
The one with me sitting at the drums.
Yeah.
Yeah, cheesy smile I got on there. Yeah, I know what you mean.
You know, but it's a cool picture. I hope you folks can find the CD. You know, I'm sorry. Please go ahead. You talked about Danny Parsons. Danny Parsons?
He's an attorney in St. Charles, Illinois.
Okay.
Our Huffy, our bass player, he's into the kitchen cabinet industry down in Tampa, Florida. Gene Bruce is retired from the trucking business. Gene was our lead guitar player. Brian Bennett has a car dealership over in Midland. And then, of course, you know me with the Home Depot and my funeral business.
And how about Dick Wagner, who, of course, was not an official Cherry Slush member, but I know he was very helpful. You know, Dick's still in the music business, as far as you know?
Yeah, as far as I know, he is. He lived in Saginaw up until about maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago. And then he moved out west. I'm not sure if he's in L.A. or Vegas or where he is now.
I mean, Dick at some point, I believe, was also part of Alice Cooper's band, wasn't he?
With Alice Cooper, and he did some stuff with, Blood, Sweat, and Tears. He wrote a big hit for Air Supply. He's been on a lot of different albums.
Okay. Now, Cherry Slush, you said maybe at this reunion.
Yeah, this reunion thing coming up possibly the 23rd of June, and we'll be doing that along with Question Mark and the Mysterians.
Okay. The CD, looking back, you know, bad news, folks. I was talking with Dick off the air. And, Dick, you mentioned that it's not really commercially available, but it often pops up on eBay, so just got to keep your eyes open for that one.
That is correct.
It's a great one, too. It's really a great CD. Dick Coughlin has been my guest. Dick Coughlin from Saginaw, Michigan, of course, the drummer of what many people would consider, you know, a legendary band, a real Relics and Rarities band. Of course, on Relics and Rarities, Dick, I don't really play a ton of hits. You know, we look at the charts upside down. So, you know, in certain areas like Saginaw, you see, you wouldn't be a rarity. You were number one over there. But in many parts of the country, if we turn the charts upside down, we'd find you in the top 10, top 20 of a whole bunch of surveys. Cherry Slush.
I'd like to just, if I can, just send out a quick hey to some real good...
Yeah, please go ahead.
That I haven't talked to in a while. I'd like to say hello, number one, to Jayla and to Ben. Mikey and Matt, you guys all meant a lot to me, and I thank you for all of your help through the years.
Well, that's so kind of you, and a real thrill for me, and I'm looking forward to you know, keeping in touch with you, and hopefully we've made new friends tonight. Dick Coughlin, you know, I'd like to close with a tune conveniently placed on your Looking Back CD. I've got a great listener out there tonight who I think is either celebrating his 50th birthday or maybe it's his 60th birthday, but he tells me that he's the president of the Dave the Ray fan club in Palm Beach, Florida. His name is Wayne. I don't know where Wayne was. Wayne was in our chat room before. Hopefully he'll come back into the chat so I can personally say hello to him as well. But Wayne, if you're out there, the Cherry Slush, they've even recorded a birthday song. And I'd like to close with that. We'll send it out to Wayne. But quickly, if you could, Dick, tell us a little bit about Birthday. Of course, it's the Beatles song. How did you guys, what state did you record this one in? And tell us how you came about recording this record.
Actually, one of my managers, Jim Leach, came up with this idea. And it was one that we recorded in Sparta, Michigan, in an old movie.
I knew it had to be somewhere different.
It had to be someplace different. And the funny thing about it was we were all underage, but we were all cranked out of our minds when we recorded this thing.
You had a lot of Kool-Aid.
No, it wasn't Kool-Aid. I think it was more like Budweiser.
Okay, well, I was trying to be nice about it, but okay, so you're admitting to the underage drinking. Go ahead.
Yep, and we sat down and we recorded this song, and it turned out excellent. A good friend of mine, Larry Raspberry from the Gentrys, he had a copy of it. I played it for him, and he thinks it's even better than the one the Beatles did.
Well, of course, my question is, when you did this record, you know, Birthday, I think, was also recorded by the Rumbles, and, of course, the Underground Sunshine had a hit with it as well. Was your recording, to the best of your knowledge, was it before Underground Sunshine and the Rumbles, or was it afterwards, or did you all kind of do it at the same time?
Ours was before, but the Underground Sunshine got the hit.
Yeah, well, it's a hit here on Relics and Rarities, your version. Dick, thanks so much for joining us, and I want to wish you a speedy recovery. I know Dick had some minor surgery just recently. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I was just having a little bit of a back problem there. They're trying to do some pain blocks for me, but it's not going to stop me from playing at the reunion show.
Well, the funny thing about it is that his doctor probably said, you know, take it easy and get a lot of rest, and here Dick is at a little bit after midnight Eastern time, still talking to Dave the Rave on the telephone line. So, once again, Dick, thanks so much.
Not a problem. I was just thrilled to be here.
Okay, you take care now.
Oh, my boss, I'm going to be late in the morning.
Okay. I'll get you a doctor's note. I'll get you a DJ's note. Take care now.
All right, thanks.
And, of course, is the Cherry Slush, and a cool, cool version for sure there. Cool version. Oh, yeah. That's their version of Birthday, and we send that out, of course, to one of our great listeners out there, Wayne from Florida. Wayne says he's my fan club president. That's what he tells me, but, you know, I don't know. I sometimes... Wayne, are you still my fan club president, Wayne? You know, he's in our chat room. He came back in, and I don't know, is he 50? Is he 60? How old is Wayne? You know, oh, he's 60 years old. Well, happy birthday to Wayne. Of course, he got greetings from me and Dick Coffin of the Cherry Slush. And, you know, he lives in Palm Beach, Florida. Now, last I checked, that's like a very ritzy area. I think that Wayne's got a lot of money. I think he's rich. I think he's a powerful individual because I've got people on the phone line. Somebody else heard me talking about Wayne. And, wait, I think Wayne might be calling. Let's go to the phone. Hi, let's go to the telephone line now. Hi, who's on the phone?
This is Wayne.
Wayne, where are you calling from?
Hey, I'm calling from South Florida.
Oh, okay. This is Wayne the birthday boy, the guy who's celebrating his birthday, the guy who says he's my fan club president. Is that you?
No, this is his biggest fan, Wayne Cochran.
Wayne Cochran?
Yay!
Like in Wayne Cochran and the CC Riders?
That's it. Like in Wayne Cochran and the CC Riders.
Oh, my God. Don't tell me you're calling...